People have a marketing department and people have a sales department, but Mike Carroll is both. He's sales dude and marketing dude all wrapped up in one.
That's impossible.
No. How does that work? Don't you have arguments with yourself? Oh, those fucking salespeople know nothing. Oh, those fucking market people don't do nothing. Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling and Sales Manifesto and Get Shit Done.
You're so humble, and like 13 other amazing books. And I'm Jen Gittimer, and I wrote Sales in a New York Minute.
And I am the president of the Jen Gittimer Fan Club.
Aww. There's
lots of members, but I'm the supreme exalted ruler.
Welcome to Sell or Die, where we may or may not hit on each other. And we will be bringing you an amazing episode
today. Today's a real good one.
Yeah, it really is.
Everyone out there has abused CRM. Like, you get it and you're all pissed off because you think your boss has a foot up your ass to get everything filled out and make sure you're up to date. And meanwhile, it's not helping you really make a sale, so you don't feel the sense of urgency to keep it done. And in the final analysis, it's going to tell you when to follow up and when Bob's birthday is.
And if you're worried that this episode is all about which CRM to buy, worry no more.
Because
this episode is not about that at all.
No, in fact, Mike Carroll is literally the director of business development for Nutshell. He's the head of growth. And what that means is that they want to add new customers, but they also want to keep customers so that they actually grow.
Yeah, if you haven't heard of it, it's like only a $4 billion company, you know.
Yeah. But listen, the bottom line is this. They're winning because the software is easy to use. And I think that's, you know, we've gone through it ourselves. We use it ourselves. And I think that the testimonial for it is that it's compatible with how you think as a salesperson.
But this episode is not actually about Nutshell, which is the coolest part. We're bringing you Mike Carroll, and he's a decision maker. He's going to tell you how to get through to the decision maker.
Yeah.
He's actually even going to tell you a story about when Mary, our salesperson, when she pitched him and what he liked about it and what he maybe didn't like about it. You're going to have to listen to find out.
Ladies and gentlemen, and diehards all over the world, the great Mike Carroll. Michael Carroll is the head of growth at Nutshell, a sneaky, powerful CRM that has helped businesses close over $4 billion in revenue. And in truth, we are a Nutshell customer.
Which we're so glad to have you, by the way.
A retired ice factory worker, which we're going to find out in a minute, whether it was the cubes or the crushed. Michael hates writing bios, but loves words, his farm, his family, and evangelizing for cooperative sales and marketing teams. Tweet him at Michael Adain if you dare.
Whoa.
It's MICHAELADAIN. Leave off the if you dare part.
So my favorite, well, first of all, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you guys. I'm so glad to be here. I'm looking forward to this for months. Actually.
We are really glad you're here. And I have to confess something.
Yeah.
That my favorite emails on the planet. Well, I love your emails, Jeffrey, when you email me.
Thank you, honey.
But my even more sometimes favorite emails are when they say, Mary Putnam won a lead with XYZ worth X. And they come from Nutshell.
That's cool. No,
I'm like, yes. Like, I get this instant notification when she closes a sale. And it's just amazing. We started this by saying how we use Nutshell, but I just want to make it clear, like, Mike is not on this episode just because we use Nutshell. Mike is on this episode because he has really interesting things and like amazing knowledge bombs he's about to drop. So
let's start with the very
listening.
First one.
Oh, yeah.
People have a marketing department and people have a sales department, but Mike Carroll is both. He's sales dude and marketing dude all wrapped up in one.
That's impossible.
No. How does that work? Don't you have arguments with yourself? Oh, those fucking salespeople know nothing. Oh, those fucking market people don't do nothing.
I will say that there is an internal dialogue that goes on in my own head quite often when it comes to priorities, right? Like, oh, you know, the sales team needs this and the marketing side needs this. I can't claim total credit. Joe and Andy Fowler being our CTO and one of our co-founders, and then Joe, our CTO, when they hired me about a year and a half ago, had kind of come up with this concept for the growth team, which is what we call it. So in a nutshell, there's no sales and there's no marketing in and of themselves, but they're all part of the growth team. I'm the head of growth here in a nutshell. So, but does it work? Yes, it works.
Okay, so talk to us about why and how it works.
I think the most important thing to pull out of this today, and you know, salespeople know this sort of inherently, you can't decide where in the funnel your audience is or your prospects are or your customers, right? In the digital universe, in a time when, you know, when you get somebody coming to you, they're more educated now than they ever have been on what you're selling and why you're selling it. And they're probably investigated two or three of your competitors and all that kind of stuff. And so you're becoming more of a facilitator than a salesperson, although I know Jeffrey's going to disagree with me on that last point. But that being said, it's like more of a consultative approach. But that being said, these two teams need to work in an interconnected way, because at every single touch point along that funnel, whether at the very top or at the very bottom, it requires both things. One-on-one interaction, which salespeople are the best at, creating relationships, establishing trust, doing all that in a one-to-one way. But it also requires follow-up nurturing and a little bit of pizzazz, if you will, from the marketing team to keep those leads and prospects warm. And when you have the two working separately, and the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, as everybody knows, then you run into serious and significant problems.
So I think I may have said this on the show before, but when I was in sales, we got these brochures that made absolutely no sense to what we were selling, because the marketing team made them without any communication to the sales team.
Of course.
So the senior VP said, just here's the address to mail them back to. And all boxes got shipped to the home of the head of marketing.
That's, first of all,
that's a classic. That's a classic.
Yeah.
I will also tell you that the messages are easily mixed. Sprint at one time hired me because they had this program called Fridays Are Free. So no matter what you did.
Oh, I remember that. I was so young.
Okay.
Ruthless.
I love you.
I got hired because marketing didn't know how to explain it to sales. Sales looked at it as a 20% discount.
Oh.
And marketing looked at it as Friday is the least profitable day of the week because it's a day that salespeople slough off and don't prepare until Monday. And so my job was to bring together sales and marketing, which I did.
Way to go.
Yeah, thanks. And I went to their home office in Kansas City. Then I went to their big, big office in Dallas, and I left with their badge.
Oh, no.
They tracked me down, and I had the FedEx.
They show up at the airport.
Badge. No, but they called me. Do you have a badge?
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, because they evidently didn't want people walking in. You know, with a.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, Mike, what would you say to someone who's at a company where sales and marketing are separate?
Yeah, they fight.
How do they deal? How can a sales leader better? I don't want to say deal with, but like work with their marketing manager counterpart.
I think that's a great question. I think if the leadership from both teams, if you do have disparate teams, what I would recommend is that you come together as a unit and you start measuring both of your teams by the same metrics.
Ooh.
So the biggest challenge and what frustrates salespeople the most, and I know exactly why, is that marketing metrics are top of the funnel stuff, right? Like, oh, we generated X amount of MQLs this month, right? Like, what's an MQL? It's an email address. What intent is behind an email address? I mean, varying levels, it depends. Again, to my point about being in different parts of the funnel at different times, it might be someone that downloaded a piece of content that's already talking to a salesperson. It might be somebody that literally just wanted that piece of content and like they want nothing to do with your product. They just like the style and, you know, all that kind of stuff of the thought leadership you're putting out there. But if you start to measure the sales team and the marketing team by the same metrics, in other words, sales qualified leads produced by the marketing team, revenue produced by both, and they both have to own those numbers together, then by virtue of them, like necessity, they're going to start collaborating. Because now I have a radical concept, which we don't even try here, but I think that we should. So you guys probably know, and your audience certainly does, that one of the things that sales teams try a lot, which I really love, by the way, is the idea of the pie. So you've got one account executive and let's say two BDRs or two SDRs, right? And those two SDRs feed that account executive, but those three people are measured together. Because what problem did that solve, right? That solved the problem of BDRs setting all sorts of nonsense meetings because their job is just to set meetings. And then the AE looking at these meetings, be like, there's no value here. So if they come together and they're looking for quality conversations, then the AE is training the BDRs how to recognize a good lead. And then the BDR is also trying to find that good lead because they're all measured together.
So like you take away the excuse, lousy lead.
Mm-hmm.
You do take away the excuse. And so my radical idea is that what if you were to add to that pod your demand generator or your marketer? So you go all the way to the top of the funnel and then everybody gets measured not only on the same metrics, but gets compensated in the same way. Because one of the things that salespeople get pissed about, right, is that, I mean, marketing people get a little pissed about from time to time is like, well, we produced all these quality leads. We don't get commission.
Right.
Like nobody, the problem with it, I got to side with the marketing folks on this part of the argument, right, that's really frustrating is when marketing is working well, nobody pays attention to you in the marketing part. Nobody cares, right? It's just supposed to work. How hard could it be? Write an email, send a piece of direct mail, make a TV commercial. Everybody's a marketer, right? They think that they see marketing, they know how to do it, and like everybody can do it. That's not true, just like everybody can't sell. So they get frustrated because they don't get to celebrate and be part of the wins, which they most certainly did. So for here at Nutshell, when we get a big win here at Nutshell, first thing it does, by the way, is use our Slack integration, drops that win into Slack, and everybody, including the product team, marketing, sales, everybody gets to celebrate. But then because I track it all, I can go back and I can say, hey, Ben, who you guys know runs content here at Nutshell, Ben, this lead, that giant lead came in because they downloaded our 16 cold B2B email templates. That's where they started. Thank you for producing that lead. You can go to the sales team and say, hey, so-and-so worked here. Support team kicked in. Like, so when you start tracking and measuring everybody by the same, you know, numbers and start collaborating together, it becomes fun to do together. You know,
I think so.
I would start with the metrics. Got to measure the same thing.
And
hold on. In this kumbaya process, does everybody get paid?
Well, I think they do get paid.
Are they commissionable? Are the marketing people commissionable like salespeople?
Not yet. We have team-based commission for the sales team. So there's no individual commission that the team gets commissioned together so that we're not worried about who's closing what deal or robbing Peter to pay Paul or all that kind of stuff. But we have not brought the marketing team onto that thing. Like I said, it's a bit of a radical idea. And, you know, I haven't even proposed it to anybody but you and your tens of thousands of listeners now.
Yeah, but I think it's a good idea. That way, everyone is pulling in the same direction and not measuring their own accomplishments and blaming the other person for what did or didn't happen.
Yeah,
right,
we do that
exactly
here.
What happens all the time, right? Leads go to sales. And when I was on the consulting side and I ran a small digital agency, you know, here in Michigan, you know, we were a lead generation agency specifically, and we found ourselves actually working more with sales teams than we did with marketing departments.
Mm-hmm.
For two reasons. One, we wanted to know what the quality of those leads were coming out the other end because we measured ourselves on ROI. Every single one of our clients had a spreadsheet that we made for them. Here's what you spent with us. Here's what we generated. Here are the sales. If it wasn't above 200%, then like we're not doing our job correctly. And we like our tagline was like, we encourage you to fire us. So doing that made me work with sales teams more often than not. But of course, that's the argument, right? It's like the sales team gets all these leads and they're like, these leads are junk and they don't work for them, but then they don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Like, so how's the marketing team going to know that the leads are junk? Like if you don't have a conversation with them and the marketing team takes offense, the leads aren't junk. Well, did you call any of them? Well, no. So here's my second tip. So the second tip for collaboration, and I'll be quiet and listen to you guys for a second. My
Go
second
for
tip
it.
Is you take somebody on the marketing team and put them on the sales team for a month.
Yep.
Make them BDR. So when I joined Nutshell, the first thing I did as the head of growth, I'm in a leadership position here, is I made myself a BDR on our sales team. I made sales calls. And I've done it for a year.
Way to go.
Yeah.
And so it's important to who else talks to customers more than your sales team?
Nobody. Service Nobody. People, maybe.
Support people, maybe. Yeah. That's
And support people, are your call's very important. You'll be taken in the order that yours was received. Your estimated wait time is 41 minutes. You might want to go to the website. And sometimes they didn't even tell you that your estimated wait time is 41 minutes. You just got to wait 41 minutes.
Have you tried Nutshell Support yet, Jeffrey?
No.
We haven't needed
no,
it.
No, but Mary, I think
Oh, I love hearing that. And I would highly encourage you to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it's the whole thing about software is it needs support. Don't take my word for it. Go into any Microsoft store in the mall. There's a line of people all bitching about their software.
Doesn't matter how easy you make your software to use, and most people don't even try to do that. But to recognize, and you've seen this in our marketing before, like software doesn't close deals. People do.
Yeah.
So the software is a tool, just like a shovel or a hammer or anything else that you might put to use. And it's only as good as the person that's like in the hands that it's being used in, right? And so we've always recognized that. I'm so glad to hear you guys say that Nutshell is easy to use and we haven't needed support yet, but that doesn't mean you won't. And it doesn't mean that we shouldn't provide it. And so,
yeah, right. I think Mary did. Mary got some support when she first started, but you've won awards for easy to use.
Yes. Yeah. From Capterra, Gigi Crowd.
Yeah. We checked your ass out. Don't worry.
But I had no doubt.
Yeah. You have to vet some. If you're going to buy software, it has to be compatible with the people that are going to use it on an everyday basis.
Well, especially for us, because people ask us all the time, who do you recommend? And we don't ever recommend someone we don't use. And we're not going to use something that's difficult to use. I'd rather use a spreadsheet if that's the case.
And I think that software is also a morale builder or buster.
Yeah.
That if it's a pain in the ass, it becomes a conversation piece and your first name changes to fucking.
So what are you using? Why are so many people CRM reluctant? Do they not see the benefits? I mean, I think the rumor out there is like, well, my company only wants me to do this so that they have the information in case I leave. So how can it actually benefit the salesperson or the entrepreneur who has this data and needs to put it somewhere?
I think that's an awesome question. So first of all, it scales yourself. So the one thing that's not scalable is like you as an individual, right? Like, unfortunately today we can't clone ourselves or fortunately.
Yet.
I don't know if everybody's seen the movie.
Yeah, I think that's a yet statement.
Yeah, that's a yet statement.
Although I don't know if you want two of me running around. That's scary.
We may not, but I know you do.
True. So,
And of course, that carbon copy of yourself is never going to be like the original.
That's true. No, that's true.
She does put her face down on the copy machine, though, every once in a while.
Oh, man.
But I think the challenge is why. So I think you've got two different personas and different problems here, right? So there's the frontline sales rep that doesn't see the value of the CRM because it gets in the way of doing what they do best, which is actual selling. That's one of the most common challenges, right, faced by a sales team is like the CRM is just sort of like actively in the way. And then on the management side, the CRM doesn't facilitate their ability to coach and to understand what their team is doing without putting like undue onus on the team to do crazy data entry. So I think the merge point, which is really important, and nothing is perfect. No software is perfect, right? If there was a perfect software, then there would only be one CRM in the marketplace, and that would be it.
That's true.
How many are there?
377 by my last count.
Wow. That's a lot.
It is a lot.
That is a lot. That's big competition.
So what you need to do, and what we hope we've done here at Nutshell, is do two things. One, you create a piece of software that's easy to use. And when I say easy to use, that means like, I'll give you one fundamental difference between two pieces of software. So if you go to Zoho, Salesforce, even Zendesk Sell or any of those things, you want to type in the address. So you talk to somebody, you're typing in the address, you've got to find the name field, the address field, the city field, the zip code field. And it's like six different things you got to email or fill out. In Nutshell, we have the Omni field. So you just type in the address in all one line, hit enter. Nutshell knows it's an address and like puts it where it's supposed to go.
Oh, neat.
It's little things like that make it easier for frontline sales reps to do their job. And then on the back end, sales managers need powerful reporting tools to be able to report on activities and sales and all those types of things to get the visibility that they need. And I think one of the challenges in the marketplace is you have, you know, a Salesforce, by the way, which has ultra powerful reporting tools. I mean, crazy powerful, right? You know, you can report on whatever you want, custom instances, whatever you want to do, but like using it is an absolute nightmare. I mean, ask any frontline salesperson who's not a Salesforce evangelist, and there are many, it's a $1 billion company. I'm not meaning to be disparaging of Salesforce, but it's frustrating. But it can be cumbersome to use from time to time. And the reason is it's sophisticated. We don't think that that has to be mutually exclusive, power and simple. It shouldn't have to be like that. And you guys have experienced it. So I think that's where any software meets, like whether you're talking about marketing automation software, sales enablement software, you know, your outreach.io's, your apply.io's, like they need to be both easy enough for the person that has to use it every day, and then also powerful enough for the person, you know, that has to manage that process to use it.
This is a podcast, dun, 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 which means for a lot of you, you don't get a chance to see us. That's why you should follow us on Instagram. Personally, I'm at Jeffrey Gittimer. Jen is at Jen Gittimer.
We post pictures of our travel, behind the scenes, our dogs, our life. We ask interesting things in stories. If you DM us, we'll even respond.
No, we won't.
Well, you might not, but I respond to every single DM. And of course, we give you some more sales wisdom over there. So if you're not on Instagram, we just gave you one great reason to join. Follow us today, and you may even get a shout out on our next podcast. At Jeffrey Gittimer, at Jen Gittimer, we'll see you on the gram.
Wait a minute, the gram? Is that one of those words that if you're cool, you say the gram instead of Instagram?
Hell yeah. I mean, you could say like, we'll see you on Insta.
Oh yeah. I would say gram. You would say Insta. I say gram. You say tomato. I say tomato. And everyone has a great time when you follow us.
See you there. So if diehard, if you're looking for a CRM, make sure, test it out.
Make sure it's easy to use.
Yeah. Make sure it's something that you're going to want to use, not just feel like you have to use it.
But in the heat of the battle, from a CRM perspective, I don't need to know it's this guy's birthday.
Well, it depends on what you're selling. Like when I worked retail, I loved knowing everyone's birthday because every female wanted a new outfit for her birthday. So 3 weeks in advance, I could call her and be like, hey, your birthday's coming up. What are you wearing? Why don't you come in and shop with me? And they'd be like, how do you know that? And be like, because we celebrated last year and I wrote it down. And so, like, you know, so like there are some reasons why you may want that data.
But my insurance guy sends me a birthday card and I don't like it.
Yeah, but that's because you think about your policy and whatnot, probably.
I'm sure, you know, about shuffling off the mortal coil, which is never.
Exactly. Yeah. So I want to talk about you for a second, Mike, because in your bio that Jeffrey read, I've really loved this part where you said, Michael hates writing bios, but loves words. So talk to us about your love for words and how important that is in selling and marketing.
Absolutely. So I, I'm a writer by sort of trade and I guess passion. Like when I went to school forever ago, went to college for literature and then I have a master's degree in journalism.
Oh, wow.
I worked in politics for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years as like a communications director and a speech writer and that type of thing. So
we will not ask.
you're welcome. And that's the if you dare part in the bio. I've always loved words as a writer. I've always loved words as a reader. But my mother, actually, not to get like too sentimental about it, instilled in me at a very young age the power that words have to change people's minds in almost any scenario, whether you're talking about sales or politics or conversations between loved ones or whatever else. Like words are what make us human. Our ability to communicate is what makes us human. And I've always been fascinated with how it changes our minds and our hearts and all that kind of stuff. And so no matter what we're talking about, it always involves words, right? So that's where my love of words comes from.
So do you use that in your sales training? Like, are there certain words you help your salespeople use over other words, or maybe have them say things in a certain way versus another way? Like how does that come up in selling?
I think it's a great question. So we're not big script people here at Nutshell, and I can see Jeffrey and he's gonna start.
No, I'm thinking like do you call somebody a douchebag or do you
Well, see, to us it's taster's choice, right? So I can and this is where I pull some like lessons from politics. If this is too long of a story, interrupt me, but I'll try to keep it short. So one of the things that I found most impressive, and this is not as a political scientist, right? Like I don't care about ideology or whatever else. Whoever you vote for, it's whoever you vote for. It doesn't matter to me. When I look at politics, I look at like a game. Like, so it doesn't, you know, when it comes to the, like running campaigns and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, one of the most impressive things I ever saw is that field ops is sales, right? Politics is sales. It's selling of an idea. It's actually the hardest sales that ever was.
Or a human to another human.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, so one of the things that you do is you get volunteers to go knock on doors and you give them a script and, you know, here's Jeffrey Gittimer. He's running for county dog catcher and he'll catch dogs faster than any other dog catcher ever would. And he still loves dogs. So he won't be abusive and like whatever all the other stuff is that you put in there.
He wears his own neck vibrator.
Oh, gosh.
That's right. That's right. No. He's not afraid to wear the shock collar. He
no
doles out
collars. All
the
time. No.
But anyways, that's what that was like the formula. When Barack Obama ran for president the first time, and again, no allegiance or whatever, he his field operation, which is one of the best field operations you'll ever see, did away with all of the scripts and instructed his field people and volunteers to simply go out and tell their own story. So their job was to knock on a door and tell that person they're standing in front of why they were standing there personally. So I've extracted some of that. And for our sales team, I try to make it. So yes, we have messages and things, but it's not necessarily about the words that they use because I want them to use the words that they would use in that context. So it's about them telling their own story and about why they want to help small businesses and all that kind of stuff and create that relationship. So it's less about the more personal I think you make it. And I think personalization is a term that gets thrown around a lot, particularly on the marketing side and the sales side, and people misinterpret it as, you know, making sure that I can call Jeffrey Jeffrey, or I can call, you know, I can make sure I know when your birthday is and all that kind of stuff. It's the opposite. Personalization is putting more of yourself into the relationships you're building into your marketing and or your sales activity, so that the person on the other end knows they're talking to a human being. And so that's what I encourage my team.
It's like you're giving them the ability to more easily transfer their emotion to the client because they're telling their story.
Exactly.
I love that.
When I'm customizing a seminar, which I do for everybody that I talk to, I have to do it in a language that they relate to, not necessarily that I want to deliver.
Absolutely.
And if I do that, then I'm going to win. And there's several interesting examples of it, of the obvious. I just did a seminar for a hearing aid company, and nobody wants a hearing aid. They just want
my
to hear.
My grandfather certainly didn't, but he couldn't hear me telling him he needed one.
Right, exactly. And my grandma, rest her soul, man, she was so deaf that when she took her hearing aid out, we could stand right behind her and scream her name, and she couldn't hear it. And we'd be like rolling on the floor laughing.
Anyway. Oh, it's only funny because we're all headed in the same direction. Nobody gets out alive.
Yeah. I have my 250 rock concerts under my belt, and I'm, you know, I'm part of the way gone. Man. But a guy walks into a hardware store and says, I want a drill. I need a drill. And the hardware store salesperson says, well, do you know what kind you want? And the guy says, no. And the salesman says, well, let me show you what's on sale. No, the guy wants a fucking hole. He doesn't want a drill.
That's right.
And so if you understand that, if you understand the outcome, then the salesperson could easily say, what are you drilling?
Right.
I'm drilling concrete. I'm drilling bricks. I'm drilling wood. I'm
right,
drilling
now
metal.
Now we've narrowed our scope.
Do you need different drills for
and,
that?
And then he says, let me show you the best thing we have.
Right.
And that way I get, you don't want what's on, you don't want a cheap shit drill. You want something that's going to actually make the hole.
100%. And also, why would you, yeah, to your point, like, why would you start off any sales conversation with like, here's the least amount of money you can spend?
So I'm telling
deep,
you,
the deep salesperson in me, right?
I can tell you retail stories that are just scary.
Oh, I'm sure.
And they don't understand the message. I did a thing for a golf club company, and I go into, I don't want to say the name of the golf store because it wouldn't be fair to them, so I'm going to call it Utah Bob. And I walked in and I said, I'm looking for a set of golf clubs. And the guy says, steel or graphite? Like the shaft, you know. I don't know. I said, I don't really know. He goes, well, let me show you what's on sale. In the meantime, they have these company names up on the wall. I don't want that. Let me see minus 10 strokes, minus five strokes, minus two strokes. That's what's good. That's all I give a shit about.
Right.
Right. Do you need better distance? Do you need better accuracy?
Right. Yeah, like, so I walk in and say,
why don't you take a swing? And then we're going to talk about which golf.
Okay. But here's the deal. I walk in and say, I want a set of golf clubs. And the salesperson, if he has half a brain, is going to say, tell me about the best golf shot you ever had.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
And if you have ever had a hole in one, you remember the club, the hole, the day, the course, the weather, what you had for lunch.
Yeah.
7 years ago. Seven years ago. You can't remember what you had for lunch yesterday. And so the challenge that you have is, can I create that emotional connection with you? And you have the same opportunity with a CRM, which is highly competitive, resisted by many. No, that's not fair to say. Resisted by most.
It is,
by my definition, the most purchased, least used software in the history of the computer.
But it doesn't have
the funny thing about that. Oh, go ahead.
No, go for it.
Well, I was going to say, so the funny thing about, like, touching on that, which is really interesting to me, because it's true. It is the most, everyone has one or thinks they need one, or which they do, by the way, like, definitely need a CRM.
Of course. I agree 100%.
But that being said, and we try to do this more at Nutshell, and I would encourage anybody that sells software to do this, which is what drives me nuts in the software space is like the hyperbolic pitch, right? Like, we're going to close more deals with this software. I mean, yes, you will, but not the software. You close more deals.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And like, so like, I mean, is it going to help you do it? I mean, if you use it correctly, sure. And we're going to train you and teach you how to use it and all that kind of stuff. But for the companies that come out there and say, you know, if you use this X software, like, we're going to 10X your revenue. Well, that's just goofy. There's a whole lot of steps like between 10Xing your revenue.
We call it around here BS.
Yeah, we refer to it as bullshit. But the bottom line is, it's believable bullshit in many cases, and people will buy the wrong thing for the wrong reason.
Although Facebook is now cracking down on that. Like, if you send your ad to a page that says, like, we will 10X your revenue, they're going to say it's a false claim. Like, you can't prove that. Yeah. And they'll even, in some cases, they're going as far as to cancel people's accounts or disable their ad accounts.
Yeah.
It only took them 20 years to become virtuous.
Their algorithm is scary good at reading landing pages that you're sending people to.
You know, see, this is what I find interesting. Okay, so this is a little bit of a rabbit hole we're going to climb into.
But go
maybe
for it.
The audience will like it. Maybe they won't. So I'm no fan of Facebook, and I've written many of things. And I was on a podcast 2 weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago, where the host of that particular podcast asked me outright. He's like, "What's your problem with Facebook?" And I responded, philosophically or like from a business
perspective? Yeah.
and so he's like, "Well, how about both?" And so we went down that philosophical rabbit hole, which is, you know, ruining social discourse one person at a time. But yeah. That being said, I want to ask you guys a question. So on Facebook, you'd say, you know, we're going to 10X your revenue. And then they shut off that ad, because I've had ads shut off on Facebook. But you know what you see forever in Facebook is the individual salesperson or the individual person that's like, I've got this one thing, you know what I mean, that's going to fundamentally change. Yeah. Like, you can make $1 million on Facebook tomorrow if you do this thing. They let those ads run all day long. So as long as you're lying about how much money you can make on Facebook, it's cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I have no argument with that. Look, they're self-aggrandizing. They're, you know, they're in the free enterprise system. They're going to violate it like everybody does. I mean, Sears and Roebuck did it for years.
Yep.
They advertised a $109 dishwasher, and when you got there, they were all sold out. So bait and switch was okay in retail, but it's not good online.
No, it's not good online. And the worst place spenders are car salesmen.
Yeah.
It's not the salesman's fault, by the way. That's the OEM. That's the original. It's a manufacturer, right? Who puts out, oh, you can lease this car for $3.
A dollar over invoice.
President of the company's son.
A dollar over invoice is my favorite one. That means if you make 100 cars sales, you made $100. Yeah, I buy that.
Right.
But you sell $20 million worth of cars and you make $100. Rock the house, bub. Okay, so I think that you have to look at it from a standpoint of, you're your own filter. You know, yes. You have a bullshit filter in your head, and you got to, at some point, you got to say, that's bullshit. And if you don't have the wherewithal to say that, then you're that person's victim.
100%.
Totally.
And then, you know, it's an ethical thing at some point. You know, the old phrase, I can sell ice to an Eskimo. Yeah, but should you?
Right. Exactly. So, okay.
When you come over, by the way, I have the Norman Rockwell lithograph of the salesman selling a refrigerator to Eskimos.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, that's so awesome.
It's pretty cool. So, okay, before we go, there's this one important question we have to ask, because you're head of growth, and I'm sure you have lots of salespeople trying to get to you all the time to sell you things. So what would be a strategy that would actually work to get to someone like you at your level if I were trying to sell you something, or some sort of, you know, SDR was trying to sell you something?
Other than 10xing your revenue, of course.
10xing my revenue.
Yeah. Or what's worked in the past?
Yeah, so I'll give two pieces of advice. One is be real with me. Right. So like, if you're selling a meeting, sell the meeting. If you are wanting to start a free trial, then sell the free trial. Usually it's the meeting they're trying to sell. So be a real person on the other end. Like, take the time. And this, everybody should know this, right? I mean, these are the most basic things. Take the time to understand who you're talking to, and you're talking to, you know, someone in the C-suite or a leadership position, and understand what makes their day challenging, and then provide the value that you're trying to push to them. So that'd be number one.
Is it a phone call or an email?
For me, it's an email. Call me.
Suppose
I don't want to talk to you if I'm not supposed to be talking to you at a certain time of day. There's nothing more frustrating than being interrupted. Because I'm a salesperson, right? And all the calls, and I do jump on the sales team, I'm gonna answer. So by the way, if you get me on the phone, you better be good.
Yeah.
So you can call me, but I better be entertained within 30 seconds. Like, if I'm not smiling and having fun or whatever in the first 30 seconds of that call, then you're ruined forever. I'm not going to open your emails or do whatever.
And then they're like, well, may I send you an email to follow up? And you're like, sure.
No. I mean, my email's on the way.
Send me something I can delete easily.
Dutchell.com, you know you lost.
Exactly.
I don't give you my personal email address.
Suppose the video, suppose the email has a video. Will you click it?
I will. So actually, that was the second thing.
Tell us.
So I like, as a marketer and a salesperson, I like interesting tactics. So if you were researching me as a prospect and you know that I work in sales and marketing, well, then you should know automatically, you better do something kind of funky to get my attention. Which, by the way, you know who did something like that? Mary. So I wanted to bring this up today, and I hope it doesn't embarrass her in any particular way, because I love Mary.
She's going to love it.
Yeah.
So one of the things, so it was, you know, you guys have come to us, and, you know, we, as your audience knows by now, decided to sponsor the Sell or Die newsletter. And like, I've been very glad to do that. And it's been an awesome experience and all that kind of good stuff. But that's a sales discussion. And Mary was having a sales discussion. When she won the deal, or at least, I can't remember, it was close to closing, or we had closed, she sent a video to us of her dancing to a particular song, and it received mixed reactions in the office. However, we talked about it for like 15 minutes.
Right.
Ooh, that's amazing.
Right. And so I thought it was awesome. Somebody else was like, I don't know, it seems like a little much. And I was like, you know, it's like this whole conversation ensued. But to me, as a sales and marketer, like, that was the point of it, right? Whether you like it or not.
She broke through the ordinary.
That's right.
And it didn't necessarily have to be extraordinary. It just had to be different enough to create dialogue.
That's right.
And it was.
So much noise out there. And it's hard, you know, to the audience, it's hard to do, man. Like, don't hate yourself if you don't get it right the first time. That's the whole point of testing and optimizing and figuring it out. And like, have fun with it. Don't take yourself too seriously. And just, you know, you got to figure it out.
Well, hey, this has been amazing. Yeah. We're so glad you were able to come on the show. We're honored. Thank you.
And we are also happy that you recognized Mary's dancing ability.
It's absolutely stellar. No, the pleasure is all mine, you guys. I love coming on. If anybody wants to hear more of me, I don't know why you would. I have my own podcast called Make the Logo Bigger. You can certainly read more on the Nutshell blog. It's nutshell.com/blog.
Wow, that was an amazing episode. I really liked when he was talking about his political story and specifically how they, if you take politics out of the story.
Right. And you learn the personalization aspect of
it. Yeah, exactly. The personalization, how they used story to transfer emotion, how they really connected deeply with the people they were speaking with. And the question for our diehards is, how are
what's
you doing
story?
That?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What's your story? How are you using it to connect with your people?
Yeah. The story is one thing because you don't want to confuse it like with a joke, like two guys walking down the street. You want to make the story, number one, transferable.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, actionable. What can you do? You tell me this story. Okay, is it about me? Is it about my product? Is it and how I would use it and take advantage of it? Or is it just one of your stories that you're trying to tell to look cool?
Now, I'm going to ask you to do something, which is
me or
our diehards. Not you, honey.
Okay.
Don't worry. You have already enough to do.
Exactly.
Diehard, I want to thank you for your listenership and ask that you screenshot this episode and post it in your Instagram story with the number one lesson you learned. Make sure you tag Mike Carroll, tag Jeffrey, tag me. We love seeing what you love about each episode.
And keep in mind, we didn't mention this along the way, but Nutshell has an online virtual program called Boundless 2020. And it features me with a bunch of other people talking about sales and talking about how to make more of them. It's not about Nutshell. It's all about their opportunity to help salespeople make more sales. And on that particular keynote of mine, which I'm giving like the main keynote deal, I'm going to be talking about competitive advantage and not just what you have and the competition does not have, but rather how to create your own competitive advantage. So I would recommend, we'll put something about Boundless in the show notes. I would seriously recommend that you register and then attend.
Absolutely. So Boundless is a virtual conference. You can literally watch it in your pajamas, on your couch, on your bed. I have a Zen couch. That's where I'm going to be watching it from. But there's amazing speakers showing up. Make sure you register. Go to the show notes, click that link, and it's free. Why not get some new wisdom?
Boundless 2020. I'll see you there.